You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks again for joining me this week. We've got lots of stuff to talk about before we get to our guest, who is waiting for us in the interview room. But there's lots to talk about, as I said. First of all, California. You know, I always seem to be talking about the same states. Well, California is doing it again. Yes, indeedy. First, they roll out the red carpet to release prisoners. Under Obama, he released tens of thousands of them. Jerry Brown, the wonderful governor of California, followed suit and has, you know, couldn't wait to open the floodgates and allow more offenders back on the streets to commit more crimes. And then they are, of course, the lawmakers over there just seem to be stepping all over each other, trying to make one more ridiculous bill crazier than the last one. So now they have done this. A bill to end cash bail passes the California State Assembly. Okay, I just want to make sure you catch this, okay? A bill that would end the cash bail system in California passed the State Assembly, despite opposition from both sides of the political aisle. So, the senator that put forth this bill, of course, is a liberal senator, and what that in essence what that means is that in the name of justice, here's what he says: supporters of the legislation complain that the current bail system was disproportionately unfair to low income people awaiting trial. Well, no kidding. Well, who's committing the violent crime? It's not the people on Nob Hill. It's disproportionately a large number of people that are lower on the socioeconomic ladder. So, of course, it's going to be disproportionate. But there doesn't seem to be any sense of reality there. So, in essence, what this is going to mean, well, I'm going to quote people from the industry, the bail bonds industry said, let me tell you who knows how big of a deal it is to end this bail industry. It's going to change the way people are less safe on the streets. In essence, there is no reason not to commit a crime. If you're not going to be held to some standard to go back to court, what do you think is going to happen? They're not going to go to court. That's what bail is for. It's just to ensure a court appearance. Well, they've been watering down the bail system for years and years and years, making it more and more simple and easy to get out of jail. If you end the system entirely, you just open the doors. You commit a crime, you get arrested, you go to court, and you get out. And you repeat over and over and over again. Once again, the state legislature in California goes above and beyond to pass another ridiculous law. Hasn't passed yet, but it's gone through the state assembly. And you know if it gets to Jerry Brown's desk, he's going to sign that sucker. He can't wait to sign another ridiculous law into existence. So let's talk about some of the other insanity that's going on. Where else do I always talk about? Chicago. Yeah, baby. And the insanity just continues in Chicago as well. You know, there are thousands of shootings per year in New York, in Chicago. Thousands. Predominantly young black men getting killed by young black men. the percentage is stunning. Okay, and then when a police officer gets involved in a shooting, the world stands still in Chicago, and the streets are lined with people demanding justice, quote unquote. So now here's what happened that just makes this even crazier. So the police, who are being charged with taking guns off the streets and trying to stop violent crime, they spot a kid with a gun. Now he's very young. He's 12 years old, and he's walking around. He's got a gun. Police tell him to stop. Surprise, surprise. He doesn't. He runs. They chase after him, and as they chase him, he runs up into a stairway, which turns out to be his grandmother's house, and then he turns the gun on himself and he blows his brains out, kills himself. That's a pretty radical thing to do for a young man. Now he's 12 or 13 years old. The outcry is immediate, and somehow the police not only get blamed for his death, but the lawyers for the family come out and accuse the police of murder. Here's what he says. This is the lawyer. Where do they get these guys? Here's the lawyer. Stephen was on the stairwell of his grandmother's house on the west side of Chicago when police officers stormed up the stairwell chasing Andrew Stroth, an attorney for Rosenthal's family, said during a press conference that preceded the protest. Then he went on to say, within moments, these officers, without cause or provocation, shot and killed Stephen. Based on several eyewitness accounts, these officers ended the hopes and dreams of a talented young man with a bright future. I think I'm going to vomit. Yeah, okay, Mr. Lawyer Man. Another liar who comes out and accuses the police of murder. There's a couple little problems here. Well, the coroner already did the autopsy, and it revealed that it was a suicide. And by the way, these officers had body cameras on. Well, guess what? It showed they weren't anywhere near the kid when he shot himself. So how does an attorney, someone who is supposedly a member of the bar and an officer of the court, how do they get away with these wild, incendiary accusations of murder? Like things aren't bad enough in Chicago. Now we have to add more fuel to the fire. So these protests go on, and these demands for justice, and blaming the police for everything. And it doesn't matter. Common sense doesn't seem to matter anymore. The truth doesn't seem to matter. Ever since Ferguson, the truth seems to have become inconsequential when it comes down to a political narrative about racist policing. And the idiocy here is that it is a narrative that has been pushed and pushed and pushed by the media and by the political left and by race-baiting politicians who couldn't care less about the people they serve, but sure as hell care about getting more votes. And so they use the whipping boy police to appeal to their base, and it doesn't matter what the truth is. As long as this situation is going to go on in Chicago, we are going to see continued carnage on the streets. Just 2 weeks ago, there were 70 shootings in one weekend, 14 murders, and no arrests. Well, that's a pretty startling kind of statistic there. And what that shows you is that the police have been so cowed by the leadership of that moron Rahm Emanuel that they basically are standing down. And who can blame them? Whether they act or they don't act, if you act, you're going to get more trouble if you don't act. So what is a reasonable person going to do? This is called depolicing. And it is one of the reasons why Chicago has become one of the most dangerous places in the United States to live. I mean, your odds of getting shot as a young black man in Chicago is much higher than a combat soldier in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's a pretty sad commentary. And the real shame of this is this doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be that the Chicago Police Department has the manpower and the resources to really, really clamp down on violent crime. But they have to do it in concert with a plan, and that comes from leadership, the leadership of Chicago. And they just reveal themselves to be quintessential politicians, talking out of both sides of their mouth, but they certainly aren't putting forth any solutions. All they are putting forth is rhetoric, and generally speaking, anti-law enforcement rhetoric. It's the police's fault, you know. So why we're talking about false narratives? An incident happened in Raleigh that once again revealed the media for what they are, and that is anti-law enforcement having a political agenda. So what happened was a piece of videotape showed up, and it was of the arrest of a black man by a group of police officers. The video that was played by the media that went up on television was a short snippet that showed a whole bunch of police officers on top of this man, and they are in a fight trying to get this guy into handcuffs. One of the officers is seen apparently kicking him in the head. And the outcry is immediate. It's once again, it's the brutal police. It's the racist police. It's the out of control police. And then they were forced. Well, somebody else released the rest of the videotape. And this is what took place before the officers dogpiled this violent, violent criminal. And what it showed was the reality. The suspect was a big guy, and it revealed that he was trying to attack the police. He wasn't trying to attack, he was attacking the police. He was punching, he was going after different officers. They were trying to use lower lethality techniques to subdue him. They were trying to use their batons, didn't work. It was like hitting a brick wall. They used their taser, didn't even slow the guy down. And at one point, he's punching these police officers. They finally get him onto the ground, and he latches on, he bites the foot of this one officer who shakes her foot loose, and it looks like he's getting kicked in the head, and that's what the media seizes on. When the rest of the videotape showed up, and then that the same media outlet, the television station, had to play it, and then they were pretending that they didn't know that it was there. It was such a transparent move on their part that even the community realized that they were being taken in by this media outlet, and it wasn't about the truth. It was about another narrative, false narrative, one that could have had a serious impact on the people who lived in Raleigh. It could have fomented more dissent and protests and violence. Luckily, it didn't. But what did it do? it once again revealed the media for what they are, liars with a social narrative. So this and some of these other events around the country where the media somehow gets so much power that they can manipulate the way that people view the actions of law enforcement officers. And then, of course, also in California, every time I open the paper, there's something else that gets my blood pressure going. The governor pardons violent felons so that they won't be deported. Yes, indeedy. Governor Moonbeam pardoned three former prisoners who were facing deportation to Cambodia, including a man convicted of murder. Swell. And this is the social narrative that continues on and on and on in a sanctuary state where they are more concerned with political correctness than they are with the safety of their citizens. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. If you're a police officer or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it, and this is really good stuff. You don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of odors, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And it's only available at StinkyVest.com. Go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com. See their products, and it is worthwhile. For those of you who are involved in investigative work, there is an amazing software that you've got to take a look at from Blue Light LLC. And Blue Light is a company owned by a retired Special Forces Sergeant Major. He is a strong supporter of law enforcement. And this software is amazing. It is incredible for conspiracy investigations, narcotics investigations, homicide. It's called Analyst Notebook, and it's a product that has been used very, very successfully in bringing down a lot of bad guys. The reason the Special Forces Sergeant Major got involved in it is because he used to use it in the Middle East for discovering IED, improvised explosive devices, originators, and their networks. But it's great for civilian police work. So check it out, Blue Light LLC, it's Analyst Notebook, and it is an amazing product. Check it out.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, and someone who has contributed greatly to the mental health and emotional well-being of law enforcement officers all over this country. His name is Rob Michaels, and he's got quite a CV, if you will, but he is the CEO and founder of Serve and Protect, a nonprofit organization that helps law enforcement officers suffering from post-traumatic stress injury. Rob, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Well, Randy, I'm glad to be here with you. I'm happy for your show, I'll tell you, and the work that you do. All of us together maybe can get the word out and help people.
Exactly. You know, and I'm glad you said that because I just had some pretty good news about the show. We're now reaching about 200,000 people on live talk radio, and I get about 100,000 downloads per week on the podcast, which is the same show.
Good.
Yeah, so we're having an impact, and it's because of guests like you that come on and people are interested in. You know, Rob, you've been dedicated to the American law enforcement officer for years. Let's go into your background and why you're so dedicated to this cause.
Randy, I was a police officer in Norfolk, Virginia, and before leaving to go back to college, I was a detective, and, you know, we had two suicides in Norfolk. One of them was a murder-suicide, and the other was a straight-up suicide. One of our detectives in narcotics was leaving, and one of his buddies said, "So what are you doing?" It was late at night. He said, "I'm going to go home and kill myself." And they said, "Well, make sure you use your 44. Do it right." And he did. And, you know,
oh my God,
it's that kind of thing. It's remembering all that I experienced in Norfolk. And, you know, when I left college, I went and got a bachelor's and a master's and ended up in Nashville in the music business. And did that for quite a while, but became a chaplain for our FOP lodge here. And realize that from when I was on in law enforcement to today, things have changed a lot in terms of the needs of the officers. A lot more stress apart from the job, and what I mean by that is things that they see on the job, but from administration, politics, activist groups. I mean, it's crazy how much anti-cop effort and sentiment there is in our country, and how many administrators around the country are clueless as to what their guys go through.
I think you've hit a major topic here. You know, one thing that I have, when I have conversations with law enforcement officers from around the country, there's a common theme. And that common theme is that they're more afraid of their own administration than they are of the dangers on the street.
Right.
This is unfortunately causes additional post-traumatic stress where it didn't have to even occur.
Absolutely. There are a lot of elements that generate trauma and stress. You know, the vigilance that our guys are under. I mean, think about this. I just did an interview with a Tennessean that published a week ago this last Sunday. I mentioned Black Lives Matter in a seminar and on the website, and the young interviewer thought that was a political statement. I said, no, it's not. It's a statement of reality. You have a protest in New York wanting dead cops. The next day, one of the protesters shot and killed two police officers. You know, you've got them calling for pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. The incidence of assassinations by ambush rose dramatically. So our guys are always having to be on guard. Well, that stress is a form of trauma. Now, the financial situations that they face. But then, you know, when many departments insist they go through EAP, there's one major department, I won't name it, but we know of a person that we helped that was prepared to commit suicide, called EAP twice and got voicemail.
For just for the listeners, Employees Assistance Program is an EAP.
Right. Sorry. but the point being, when he finally called one of our people, he had the gun to his head. He was ready to go. And fortunately, we were able to get him where he could calm down and go into treatment. But that's unfortunate that that could even happen in a department of that size. It is a major city. And, you know, when they were confronted with the voicemail, no, we called him back. Well, they didn't. You know, what we do is not challenge EAP. That's not what we're here for. We're a safety net. I mean, for me, and what I tell employee assistance programs is, we're not here to replace you. But if somebody is afraid to call you, don't you want them having somebody that they can call?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to just send them away. The guys that... Go ahead.
Let's talk about what your organization does, because, you know, for the listeners that are just tuning in, you know, you make reference, but let's talk about what Serve and Protect actually does.
Well, our primary focus is twofold. The first part of it is facilitation. We partner with Safe Call Now, and when people call their crisis line that aren't needing residential care, they send their information to us, and we go to work in two ways. First, we assign a peer advocate to talk with them while we do the second part, which is finding a therapist in their area that takes their insurance, and we interview every one of them to make sure they understand the job, so that when that first responder calls, everything is set. They just need to make an appointment. They know they can go in and be safe talking with this person. And so that's the primary part of what we do. We started in 2011. We now, it's 7 years later, we've helped almost 5,000 people. So we've been busy. The second part of what we do is educational, because if we can get to people before they make any mistakes, or before they get to that point of wanting to take their lives, when they're struggling with trauma, and let them know that help is available, and here's what you're experiencing, here is the analysis of what post-traumatic stress is. We don't call it a disorder. We call it an injury.
Exactly.
We believe that's an emotional injury, and furthermore, it's my opinion, you may agree or disagree, but if a police officer commits suicide and it's rooted in an on-the-job incident, it's my opinion that that should be considered a line-of-duty death. Because if you've got somebody that had that kind of a trauma, and I'll give you a good case. Up in Canada, there was a Mountie, and this was some years ago, but he was called onto a Greyhound bus because the guy had gone crazy. When he got on there, the guy had started eating the guy he killed. And that's pretty gross.
Geez,
yeah. So it freaked the Mountie out. He addressed it, had significant trauma, became a spokesperson for getting help. But a couple of years later, he committed suicide, and the department decided to give him some honors because of the experience being on the job that led to his suicide.
You know, it's funny you bring this up. You're the second person today that I've had a conversation with that brought up the very, very same topic. And this is a really sensitive issue in a lot of agencies. I remember especially with what just happened in Dallas County, which we'll talk about here in a second, but when I was assistant commander of Las Vegas Metro's Honor Guard for 15 years, there were some very heated discussions, even between members of the Honor Guard, about how to treat suicides. And so I know this is a very difficult topic, but you know, especially with what happened in Dallas County just this last couple days ago. The sheriff there denied any honors for an 18-year veteran cop suffering from post-traumatic stress who committed suicide. I mean, the cops themselves had to bring their own flag to put to give it to the widow.
Well, you're right. Here's the thing for me, and when I teach seminars, what I'll tell the guys in the audience, because in two different instances last year, there had been a suicide on the very department I was teaching. And what I'll tell them is this: 30 seconds before that officer, that firefighter, pulls the trigger or takes the pill, if anybody described them, they describe them as a hero.
Right.
They're, you know, they're great. They've done this, they've done that. But unfortunately, what happens is the view, you know, if somebody is committing suicide for other means, not because of something that happened on the job, take for example Fox Lake, where, as it turns out, that guy staged his suicide to make it look like he was killed, and turns out he was not a good guy. There were claims of, you know, impropriety. I'm not talking about that guy. I'm talking about the guy like up in Canada, where he's afraid to talk to his department because he's afraid of what they're going to say. So he keeps it all bottled up inside. And he gets to the point where he feels no hope. He feels like there's nobody cares. He might have had a few drinks, because addiction is not part of post-traumatic stress. It's a byproduct. But when he's sitting there thinking, there's no way out, I don't have any hope, nobody cares, and they make that decision, it's not because they're trying to hide from something. It's because something got them. The memory of that guy seeing a partially eaten body. I mean, you can think of things that you've seen, so can I. But the reality is, not everybody responds to trauma the same way.
Exactly.
You know,
and you know, here's the there's this is such a complicated issue, and it's everyone reacts to trauma in a different way.
That's correct.
There is no handbook for this. It just doesn't exist. And unfortunately, you get people that think that they're that they can make the call based on their own experiences, when the reality is that everyone deals with these situations differently.
Well, and when you have the added stress, and I mentioned this before we started, when, you know, in some areas, there are about 8 or 10 of them, I think, that have turned over investigations of police actions to a citizens review board. When you've got people that are police antagonists, not advocates, when they're activists who don't like police, making judgments on police, that adds amazing stress on every decision that they make, every word that they speak. Was that word intended to be racist? No, it wasn't. Well, we believe it was. Take, for example, in Chicago, their citizen review board looked at a case of a police shooting 2 years prior and recommended that that officer, who had been cleared already, be fired.
Yeah.
You see, the
same
stress
thing,
that
same
those...
Same thing in Los Angeles.
Yep. Those kinds of stresses, not to mention, you've got some departments. There was one up in Minnesota where they changed the contract structure. It was going to take an effect on a Monday. You had 41 deputies walk in on the previous Friday and say, see you later, we're under the old contract. I mean, you've got city managers and administrators making decisions that affect police that puts tremendous stress on them. And so where somebody is emotionally depends on what kind of a support group they've got around them. how they grew up, what emotional strength that they have. And so when somebody actually comes to the point where they feel like there's no help, and it's because they can't get out of their mind what they saw, that, I mean, it's job related. It happened on the job, not off the job. And so there is growing support for people that say, even Illinois is considering that very thing. Now, where it is, I don't know. But in Canada, rather than full honors and all the benefits, they at least gave that officer, that Mountie, limited honors, kind of like what was going to happen or reported to have happened down there in Dallas County. But as you and I both know, not so much.
You know, so, I did a video about that and posted on Facebook, and I've had videos go pretty crazy. This one actually went viral. It's been seen and shared almost 100,000 times, which shows you that this is an issue that affects not only law enforcement officers, but those who support law enforcement. They
absolutely
are incensed by this sheriff who is up for election, and I hope that this video helps her get unelected, because she has shown disdain for not only the officers of the Dallas Sheriff's Office, but law enforcement everywhere.
Well, she's an interim sheriff, and I talked to somebody I know down that way that's very influential, and this person said, and let me just say this, this person has done a lot to support law enforcement in Dallas and Dallas County, a great deal. So with that said, I called and I said, you know, I sent the initial story, and then I let this person know that I talked with them, and they said, oh, no, we actually did this. But then when I found out, after you found out, I said, no, they didn't do it. So that particular influential person is now not going to support that interim sheriff, who she said is very nice. But the point being, with an action like that, a pro-police person is not going to give support.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you're aware that I'm about to launch an organization called the Wounded Blue, which is for injured and disabled police officers. And
that's awesome.
One of the aspects that is so troubling is that a police officer who is injured in the line of duty physically is 7 times more likely to commit suicide. And that is a frightening statistic, because we already know that you know, how many more law enforcement officers take their own lives than give their lives in the line of duty.
You know, we don't know what we don't know. When it comes to statistics, in one instance, the Rudderman Foundation found that 140 police officers took their own lives last year with 129 line of duty deaths. Firefighters were lopsided too, with more suicides than line of duty deaths. But that doesn't account for retired officers, injured officers that are disabled. You know, nobody keeps track of them.
Right.
And think about where they are emotionally. They were part of the best brotherhood ever. I mean, you and I both know that. Anywhere you go and you talk to another cop, you're family. And yet when you're retired, too often they just disappear into the woodwork. Well, who are they? What is their identity now? It was being a police officer, being a firefighter. But when they're retired, they can become disconnected and be depressed very quickly.
Right.
Because they feel irrelevant now.
Exactly, exactly.
And the wounded ones, I feel particularly sorry for them because they had career left.
Yeah.
I just read, and I wish I could tell you where it was, just read of a fire department that is suing firefighters for their hospital bills.
Houston Police Department.
Houston was it Houston Department. Police?
It's Houston Police Department. Yes, and not only injured firefighters, but dead firefighters.
Brother, I'm going to tell you something.
It's
any department that does that, it's incredibly insane. Because the message that just sent to every firefighter around the country is, could that happen to us? We wonder why there is a dearth of rookies around the country. We can't hire enough.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder why.
Yeah.
I mean, when the past administration, I'll put it that way, endorsed the very group, Black Lives Matter, that call for dead cops. Mm-hmm. Always jump to the conclusion. You know, when I investigated a crime, I looked at the evidence, followed the evidence to see where it led. But unfortunately, you've got hate groups, you've got politicians that jump to the end and try and make the evidence fit their conclusion. We saw that in Ferguson. We saw that in Baltimore, where you had six police officers who were arrested, and you had a black judge who has convicted many police officers, find them innocent and exonerated them because the prosecutor was trying to jam them up. Well, when you've got that kind of thing going on, the stress level that puts on a police officer when he has to make an instantaneous decision could cost him his life. Because if he hesitates 1 minute to ask, what's this going to do to me?
While you're on that topic, let's talk about in Weymouth, Massachusetts, of a police officer who made a car stop. Somehow the suspect picked up a rock, got close enough to beat him in the head with it, and then take his gun and kill him with it. You know, I've gotten at least 100 messages today and yesterday from cops around the country, all surmising the same thing, that this officer might have hesitated to shoot this individual because of the optics of shooting a quote unarmed man unquote. You know, we this is conjecture, of course, but I know that I've received over 100 messages from cops who that's their thinking. So, you know, this whole
Randy, it's happened before in Chicago and in Florida where police officers hesitated. The suspect took their firearm and beat him in the head with it. Now, you know, that goes back to vigilance fatigue, which is a real thing. You know, when you're always on duty, when you're always on stun, because you have to be aware that at any moment, at any time, any car stop, any domestic, sitting in a restaurant, remember those guys? Sitting in a restaurant eating, guy shot him through the window. I mean, there is so much violence against police, our guys are on guard all the time. And that has an emotional impact.
Well, you know, what you're talking about is the classic hypervigilance.
Correct.
Spoken about very eloquently in Dr. Kevin Gil Martin's book, Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement. Mm-hmm. I recommend that for every single police officer, law enforcement officer, because it is told in plain English. It is it shows the science behind the emotional traumas that can come from the job, and ways to combat it. And this is something that we need to give our law enforcement officers respite against the constant barrage of negativity. And,
right.
And you know, it's organizations like yours, Serve and Protect, which plays a proactive role in reaching out and helping. Let's talk once more about what your organization is. Is it for free for all law enforcement?
You know, we serve all public safety, law enforcement, dispatch, corrections, fire. We even serve forensic medical examiners. And we charge nothing for what we do. I did 25 seminars last year in a row for Davidson County Sheriff's Department, 6 for Hendersonville Fire Department. And, you know, there were, I mean, they're right here, so there were no expenses. But I didn't charge them a dime for the seminar. Went over to Little Rock to do one for the FOP, for the Southern States Conference. And he said, how much will it cost? I said, I don't charge anything. He said, well, we'll pay your expenses. I said, yeah, that's the only thing I would expect, but I don't charge a fee. You know, if you want to make a donation, that's up to you. But we have no price structure, no fee structure. For finding referrals, we charge absolutely nothing, and we take no referral fees, meaning nobody can give us a bonus for referring to them, because we don't accept it. We just don't take money from anybody. We don't even take any sponsorships from a therapist or a residential facility to avoid even the appearance of wrongdoing.
Wow, that's very noble and very honorable. So how do law enforcement officers make contact with you if they need help?
Well, a couple of ways. By phone, it's 615-373-8000. That's our crisis line. If it's, you know, for seminars and stuff like that, they can email me at rob@serveprotect.org. Or they can go online to our website and contact us directly through that. So three ways. We've got a mobile app. If they go to serveprotect.org, they can download our free mobile app. Randy, we don't charge for anything, much to my wife's chagrin, you know.
Yeah.
So,
well, you have expenses. How do you cover your expenses?
By the grace of God. We have a major donor that has helped quite a bit. We have some people that are regular donors that give significant amounts. One is Walmart. Area Walmarts can give grants to nonprofits. And, you know, we've had as many, I guess we've had grants from about 16 or 17 area Walmarts.
Interesting.
They believe in what we do. In fact, they've done it so much, there's now a category on there for public safety. Didn't used to be. So,
really? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's interesting to know that Walmart is such a strong supporter of law enforcement. I was unaware of that.
Absolutely. They are. So, you know, when...
I'm still not going to go shop there. I can't do it.
When
it's the Walmart shoes. I can't handle it.
I understand. We're doing a conference here, a symposium, October 23rd. We're limiting seating to 100. We're going to videotape it with 4 cameras. We're going to do a Facebook live stream. And once it's edited, we'll put it available on our website and wherever else anybody wants to post it for free. It's going to cost about $20,000. We're paying that money. We don't charge anything for anybody that views it. If anybody wants it, you know, to use, they can have it and use it. Any part of it, all of it, it doesn't matter. I'm 67, and this symposium is going to be a legacy piece, and it's going to be 7 hours with 5 components. The first 2 hours, I'm going to teach, like I do in my seminars, about post-traumatic stress and suicide. The next hour is going to be teaching families how to relate to their first responder significant person. Then there'll be 2 hours on financial matters. Nick Daugherty is a retired police officer that is a master financial planner with Dave Ramsey. He's going to talk about budgeting and retirement planning. We're going to do an hour on fitness, nutrition, and sleep. And then the final hour is going to be more personal. It's going to be about faith, and I'm bringing in my old partner to talk about how without him I wouldn't be doing this. I was a bit on the rough side, and he came in and helped me turn my life around. But we're doing that for 7 hours. We don't charge for attendance, and I'm even buying Chick-fil-A lunch for everybody that attends.
Well, hell, that would get me there.
Chick-fil-A's right across the street. And let me just say this. You know, when the Orlando nightclub thing happened, Chick-fil-A opened on a Sunday and made meals for police and fire.
You know, I know that they have really stepped up to the plate and shown to be an incredible supporter of the American law enforcement officer. And when I hear criticism about them because they have a faith-based ownership, I just shake my head and go, people will decry anything if it has some traditional value to it, which I find very,
yep,
very offensive. But so, you know, we're running out of time here, Rob. What is your website?
Serveprotect.org.
Serveprotect.org. For the listeners, law enforcement or law enforcement families, check out serveprotect.org. It's a great organization, very dedicated to the emotional and mental well-being of American law enforcement officers. Rob, thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thank you.
To all my active duty law enforcement out there, as well as if you are a business owner, you need security, I want you to listen to this message. This is really important because there is an organization out there. It's a company called Law Enforcement Specialists, and they're out of Arizona, but they have a full nationwide reach for employing off-duty officers for security and traffic assignments. You know, almost every law enforcement officer I know works, they call them extra jobs, in order to make ends meet. Because let's face it, we're not exactly paying our law enforcement officers a whole lot of money. So they have to do extra jobs in order to make ends meet and put food on the table and have a couple vacations. So law enforcement specialists, they have agreements with all kinds of police agencies around the country. You have to just contact them and they will put you to work. So if you are a law enforcement officer, you want to work extra assignments, these jobs that come up sometimes through your department, but you can get more of them through law enforcement specialists. So check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And if you are in need of security, if you are in need of hiring law enforcement officers for security or traffic assignments, give them a call as well. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. Phone number is 855-976-4757. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that these folks know what they're doing and they are dedicated to assisting law enforcement officers. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. Those of you who have followed me for any length of time know that in addition to being a 33-year law enforcement officer, I'm also an author. I've written 4 books: The True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, A Cop's Life, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and my latest book, which was actually just released only a couple weeks ago, is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. It's a much different book than what I've written before, but it is truly an inspirational book because I had traveled the country talking to people who have done amazing things with their lives, people like Frank Shankwitz, who, when he was an Arizona State Trooper, created the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Gary Sinise, who's done amazing things for military and law enforcement, and a number of people, some names you know, some names you don't, but this book is full of inspiration. Changed my life doing this book. Now, here's something I'm going to share with you. You know, I have a lot of Facebook followers, you know, more than 25,000 of them. But Facebook is not allowing me to share the message of my book. I think they call it shadow banning, and it's very, very disturbing. So I'm going to ask your help. First of all, I would love for you to go to Amazon.com. It's available on Kindle. It's available on audiobook, and of course in hardcover and softcover. I would love for you to pick up a copy of this book, share it with your children, because it is full of inspiration about how everyone can become a personal hero. But I'd also ask you to share this information with your friends on Facebook and other social media, because I'm fighting an uphill battle. It's this shadow banning is a real thing. I go to share it with my followers, and it keeps on getting unapproved, saying it's too political. There's nothing political about this book. It's about good people. I'd ask for you to share this message. I need your help to get this message out, because this book can change the world. When you talk about becoming a personal hero, you change the life of one person. You add to that person's life, and you change the world. So if you would, check me out on Amazon.com. All my books are available there. But The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And I appreciate your support. I want to thank you for listening once again to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Now, I want you to keep in mind that this radio broadcast, podcast that is heard and downloaded, is also on live talk radio. It reaches about 200,000 people, has about 200,000 listens on live talk radio, and about 100,000 downloads on podcast. A large law enforcement audience, of course, and people that support us. So if you are an advertiser and you want to reach this audience, I would ask you to contact me at randylsutton@live.com. That's randylsutton@live.com. And we can talk about advertising your business on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Thanks again. We'll see you next week.